How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick, and I'm joined by a bit more of a cheerful Ronnie this evening. Hey, Ronald, how's it going that side?
You're thinking if you say I'm cheerful, then I'm actually going to be cheerful.
I mean, I've got it. What do the kids say? Manifesting it. I'm manifesting a cheerful Ronnie for today's episode.
You're coming with the wrong vibe.
Well, I got to try something because last week didn't work when I called you grumpy. So, you know.
I'm just going to ask something. There was once a certain person in your life that used the word vibe, and we made big fun of that person for using the word vibe when said person asked, "What is your vibe?" And we seem to, after that, use the word vibe a lot, especially after chasing the sun. So have we now, we're now accepted that the word vibe is now part of our vocabulary?
Well, if you say it one more time, then it's about 10 times in this episode alone. So, I don't know, Ronnie, you tell me.
No, you tell me, because you had the one that you had an issue with the word vibe and then no longer.
No, well, I don't know. I don't know, Ronnie. What's your vibe? Losing on Super Brew to me. So I was at Mike and the Mechanics this weekend. I went there with Opot, watched them in Pretoria. They're at the Sunbet Arena.
You're going to be truthful now as you tell the story.
Yeah, so they have this one famous song. I'm sure most of our listeners will know it. It's called Over My Shoulder. And, you know, that's what I'm constantly doing, Ronnie, looking over my shoulder way down on the Super Brew log.
Okay, now carry on. Let's carry on. Let's hear what you did. What did you do?
I went and watched Mike and the Mechanics, and now I'm looking over my shoulder at you all the way down at the bottom of the log.
and then you messaged me, and you're like, "Aha, look at you. You're losing on Super Brew. Ha, ha, ha." And then what happened? You didn't do the math. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we know from the show that I'm not really the one that's good with the math. So I'm in a shameful, just outside the top 50% of our pool in 825th. And Ronnie, can you believe it, is 826th.
No, my friend, I'm top 100.
Will we ever get the truth out of you, hey? Sitting there.
So let's be honest. I'm 224th and you're 825th. And you thought it was hilarious to message me, and you didn't do the math and realize that we had both had the same margin in the Wales versus France game, only for then the score to go even further in my favor. So you didn't message me. You left it. I decided not to chirp you. I waited for today to say, "You're an idiot. You should do the math before you send me a message."
You know what, Ronnie? I take the stance I'm going to give you shit regardless. Whether it sticks or not, at some point you throw enough of it, it's got to stick somewhere.
Okay, I understand.
So I had the interesting experience this weekend as well. Here they had the Sunshine Tour on this weekend. So Sunday I decide it's finished. I'm watching them pull out all the poles from the golf course and everything. I'm like, okay, fine. There's freedom in the estate now. So I'm in my wife beater. I've got my Springbok bucket hat on, looking like a proper scully there with a beer in hand. And I go out driving on the golf cart and whack.
In a wife beater?
Yeah. I look like
one of the top golf courses in the country, and you're wearing a wife beater and a bucket hat with a Zama leg in hand.
Exactly. And I drive right into the back of the last guys playing holes. I sit behind them, the 16th, 17th, and 18th hole. Can't go anywhere because there's so many people walking here watching the golf. And there's me sitting there like, oh shit. Then my Bluetooth speaker makes a noise while they're playing golf.
Oh.
It was a nightmare. But then we're sitting at this one hole, and there's this couple with their baby and a pram. And this baby starts crying. And this guy that's holding the flag to tell the crowd to keep quiet screams at this mom. He's like, "Shut that baby up. Put something in its mouth."
That's
ridiculous. How can the golfers treat like that? And then lo and behold, the Hardy Dogs had their say. Hey, Ronnie, they came over and made the biggest racket over that golf course. Like, there we go, justice.
No, well, fair enough. Don't bring a baby to a golf tournament. That's not right. But yeah, you can't shove something in the baby's mouth.
That's ridiculous. Hey, I was actually quite rude of that guy to say. And yeah, golfers apparently need silence.
No, listen, don't bring a baby that's gonna cry in your backswing. So that's not on. Parents should have known better.
Yeah. I don't know, Ronnie. Body dars in the background, plovers running amok. It's quite a noisy situation, as is.
Okay, fair enough.
Like a standard day at Loftus.
Yeah.
So before we dive into the Six Nations, Ronald, I believe that you owe a listener of our show, Wesley, the downage of a beer for comments you made on the episode last week. So you said it was Deborah's first
in
4 years. And do you have something to say there?
Look, I think there was an error in the recording and it must have skipped and misheard. What I actually meant to say is the first away win in 4 years. So that's what I meant to say. And look, obviously, you know, you do the editing and I think you sabotaged me there. So Wes heard correctly, but you didn't record right.
I pressed the button wrong. Is that what you're saying, Ronald?
Yeah, it's happened before, right? We're going to forgive you for this, Nick. It's okay. Don't worry about it. But
well, you definitely owe us a beer. You owe Wesley a beer, and I'm not going to let you get away with it either, Ronnie. So since you don't have one with you now, next week you'll be downing one on this show.
Are you waiting for me to now say something?
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to say anything. Let's carry on and go to the next point because you sabotaged the recording. I actually did say away win.
So, Ronnie, then we just need to give a shout out to the Aidenhacher Hobos. That's Clive Wright. He's in first place on 6 points at the moment, topping our super group pool after round one. So well done there, Clive. You are leading the pack. If you can keep that up, we've got some merch that will be coming your way at the end of the season.
Well done to the Uitenhage Hobos.
Then, Ronnie, just a quick look at the Six Nations standing as they are. It's always hard to read after the first weekend, but first place, we've got France, then Scotland in second, Ireland in third, England in fourth, Italy in fifth, and Wales down in sixth place. What do you make of this weekend's, Ronnie? Let's actually talk about the favorite point that's gotten the most traction on our socials, the France-England-Italy 6-2 split.
Did you see Rossi put out a tweet? Hey? I think it was a mid-England game. He put out a tweet saying it's nice to see love around the world for the 6-2 split. So it was a nice little comment from him, and I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah, you've got to enjoy Rossi's banter, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, 6-2 split, it's not, and Rossi was definitely not the first person to do it. He just popularized it, and it's effective, right? It's the nature of the game and the way things are going. The forwards just, you know, you need both forwards because they're fantastic. You know, they work so hard, and the backline just does nothing, that they just reserve all their energy. And that's just the way it is.
If there's any backline players listening, yeah, I apologize for Ronald's comments. I think he had that beer in secret that he owes Wes. but Ronnie, it is quite entertaining because there were many comments coming from the North about, you know, it's against the spirit of the game. And we had those images of the Springboks releasing the whole bench at the same time, then watching France do it this weekend. Matt Williams probably having an orgy on his own about how Galtier is revolutionizing the game. You know, then we see Borthwick doing it. It's really, really entertaining that something that was completely against the spirit of the game last year is now being, you know, lauded up north.
Well, look, I haven't seen Matt Williams actually say anything, and that probably bothers me the most, right? So he was very vocal about it, saying that, you know, this game's going in this direction and it's not good for the game, and we need to have a relook at the bench structure and replacements and how that's going to work. But he hasn't said anything, and why has he not said anything? It's because, you know, 50% of the Six Nations sides has opted for a 6-2 split, and, you know, he's not just going to ostracize the South African fans, he's now going to ostracize half of Europe. So I'd really like for him to say, like, look, you know, these other sides are also doing it, you know, against the spirit of the game.
Yeah, but we know he won't. Ronnie, let's take a look then at Friday night's fixture. France 43-0 for Wales. You know, we never want to see a whitewash here. We did say in last week's episode, hopefully it won't be a clean sweep like that. But unfortunately, it was 7-0. A big, big win for France, and Wales coming away with a couple of injuries too.
Yeah, look, I thought Wales started all right, and then it just went pear-shaped, right? And getting nil on the scoreboard is really disappointing. You know, any side that is never able to at least put 3 points on the scoreboard, that's just very poor. That means your attack is absolutely being nullified by the opposition's defense, or your attack is just, yeah, useless. And that's really sad. I think, you know, I had a look at some of the stats. Someone put out a little post at some point this week And we've been saying repeatedly, oh, Wales is a new side. It's a young side. They're rebuilding, rebuilding, rebuilding. But, you know, there are three teams that have an average younger side with less caps and less experience. So Wales doesn't have the younger side, and Wales doesn't have the most inexperienced side. I think the most inexperienced side actually goes to France, and they managed to put 43 points over what we all thought was the most inexperienced side.
Yeah, I think it's quite telling what you've said there regarding Welsh experience, because that's the big cry from Gatlin. No, we're building, we're getting these caps up. But then you've got guys like Liam Williams playing there, Josh Adams and stuff. So those are well experienced players. There shouldn't be this huge push from the media to say, well, that's an inexperienced Welsh side. Give it to them. Because they're now 13-0 on the trot. They've lost their last 13 games. Mm. But I just, you mentioned it, you know, it's never nice to see a team get zero, you know, not even 3 points. At how many points deficit does taking the three become irrelevant? Or do you take it just so that you don't get that null on the score sheet?
Yeah, look, I think we've, you know, in the back of our, this has always been in the back of our minds. At what point do you say, okay, 3 points is, we can't go for 3 points. We now have to go for the try. Look, I think if you're three scores behind, then 3 points no longer matters. First off or second off, you know, that's the way I put it. But yeah, we watched a game last year where the team was being absolutely thumped, and in the final minute they went for a 3-pointer, and that's almost more embarrassing, right? Just a consolation 3 points when you're being absolutely thumped. So yeah, it is shameful. Rather have seen Wales go for points, for tries, but yeah, like I said, I thought they started off quite well. And then they just collapsed. I don't know. Maybe the French crowd just got to them. It's a very loud crowd. And yeah, I think Wales caved a bit.
Yeah, look, there's no doubting that playing at Stade Français is an intimidating environment to take the French on. Ronnie, we come back to the Antoine Dupont discussion. I feel like this is something that's in the media every week. But he created three tries in 22 minutes in that game. You know, this new rule that you can't touch the nine within a meter of the ruck, I'm definitely playing into his hands. He was held up for one try early on as well. But I thought it's quite impressive that that was his 37th try assist in 56 tests.
Yeah, look, he's an outstanding player. I think people are always going to get a little bit heated when they say he's the greatest player that there is, because you know, we as Springboks will obviously make a case for Jason Colby or for Peter Steph Tutoi or for Eben. Like, some, we're obviously very biased. I don't think he can claim to be the greatest player to have ever played or in the world currently. But look, his stats speak for themselves. Like, he's an incredible player. He's very good. And the change in certain laws have I think, made his life a little bit easier as well. So he's going to capitalize even more. You know, there is a variation on what was always called the DuPont law, and I think we'll unpack that in the week to come. Saw an interesting video today, but I didn't prepare for this, prepare a point to discuss for this recording, but maybe it's something we can discuss in next week's show.
Yeah, we must definitely then have a look at doing that, Ronald. If we now take a look over to the dark horses of the Six Nations, Scotland, they got a 31-19 point win over Italy at home at Murrayfield. Hugh Jones, former Stormers player, jamming at centre for the Scots. He got his first hat-trick for the Scots. And what did you think of that game?
No, good. Look, I have a very soft spot for Scotland. I really, you know, they're too good a side to have not won a Six Nations in whatever it's been. So, you know, I want to see them do better. I want to see them win. I thought Italy fought back really hard, and they came back. They were, what, 19-6 or 19-3 ahead, Scotland, and then Italy fought back to 19-all, and then Scotland stepped it up again. You know, I found at times myself supporting Italy, you know, because it's, again, the underdog, right? But in my heart of hearts, it's still nice to see Scotland win, and I really hope that the Six Nations works out for them. I'm very happy for Hugh Jones. Obviously, we're biased because he, you know, he came over and he played for Ikeys and played some club rugby in Cape Town and then for the Stormers and Western Province. And so it's nice to see.
Yeah, it is definitely nice to see him getting some success in that Scotland jersey. This game to me just epitomizes Scotland being like the France of old. You know, they started really strong. They got a good lead, two tries in, and then let Italy come back into the game with some strong defense from the Italians. I was shocked to see 19 all at 60 minutes. You know, I thought Scotland would be running away a little bit with this game. But in all honesty, Italy did topple them last year. We mustn't forget that when we look at this game holistically. But Scotland with 162 carries to Italy's 94, Ronnie. That to me is a team running a lot, but not getting a lot of success over the game line.
Yeah, and look, you're right, that can also be said, but 162 carries and bashing into the Italian defense over and over again. I think we haven't got the tackle stat here, but it was very lopsided too. You know, Italy, it wore them down, right? So, and I think that's why Scotland were able to pull it off in the end when they were at 19 all at one stage and then stepped it up to score another 12 points, Scotland. So, you know, that's also part of the strategy. You can't maintain momentum, right? You've got to wait for the opposition to maybe lose some energy, lose some momentum, and then you capitalize on that. You know, it's test match rugby. It's never going to be easy, but it's nice that Scotland still came away with the win, and they need that momentum going into next week, Chris. It's not getting easier for them.
No, it's certainly not. But the last stat that sort of surprised me about the Scots was to see that this was their eighth win and they lost 9 games.
Mm.
They're on quite a good run of victories there under Gregor, and the team doing pretty well overall.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Gregor, so I think he's an excellent coach. And yeah, potentially one day we might see him as the British and Irish Lions coach, Kvyatny. But yeah, you're right. It's nice to see Scotland 8 wins out of 9. You know, there was a time where we spoke about, we used to joke that Scotland was a minnow nation that was in the top 10. And I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that probably goes to Wales, although I don't think they're in the top 10 now. But Scotland's done very well, and I'm very proud for them and there's a number of players that I hope did really well.
No, for sure, Ronnie. Then over to the All Blacks, Ireland, getting a 27-22 point win over England at the weekend.
You know, I know you so well. It's so funny when you make these jokes and you shake your head like that. It's hilarious. But yeah, the All Blacks /Ireland. Yeah, they're a strong side, even though with their coach not being there at the moment. Yeah, I'm sure he's had a bit of influence and would have dialed in some Microsoft Teams call or something and amped them up. But yeah, Ireland's a very strong side. And I didn't think England played too poorly, but Ireland's strong side.
Yeah, they are a strong side. But I mean, England started strong in this game. Then they faded out. Then they came back with two tries, sort of mimicking the Scotland game in a way. I was quite surprised. I did expect Ireland to run away with this game. As you know, I don't really rate England very highly at the moment. So although Ireland got a good win here, I do think they're showing cracks in their armor still. Andy Farrell, yes, probably still exerting an influence, but I think there's some struggles there. And we spoke last week about the expectations of the young fly-off Pendergast, but I feel like he really struggled to impose himself on this game. And I thought Marcus Smith outdid him, even though Marcus got a card in this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't disagree with you. I think Pendergast actually played a very good game. You know, he's a youngster. He's filling big shoes, you know. We can't compare him to Sexton. You know, Sexton was there for such a long time. You know, he did it on autopilot. But Pendergast, you know, I thought he managed the team and marshaled the backline pretty well. But you're right, he's up against, you know, a great 10 in the England jersey too. So, Marcus Smith for me is, yeah, he's going to be a superstar one day if he isn't already knocking on that door. So. Yeah, look, I'll disagree with you. I think maybe you're right that Marcus Smith was maybe the better 10, but Prendergast still had a good game.
Yeah, no, he did still have a good game, but I don't feel like he dominated it as the fuss that's being made about him is. And now we come into a little bit of a thing here with the 6-2 split, because typically what Russie's done with the 6-2 split is not necessarily have his bench players, but often loading that with some of his best players. So is that an indication from Ireland that they maybe still think Jack Crowley is the best 10? They're trusting him to finish off the games? Remember what he did here in South Africa last year? Or do you think they're not thinking that far? They're just using the 6-2 at the moment to deploy more forwards onto the pitch?
Yeah, the bench has definitely evolved. It's not necessarily the second best player or necessarily just impact players. You know, there's a lot of strategy that goes into it. So I think maybe they've identified Crowley as a player that can close out a game. You know, when the youngster is perhaps faltering a bit, Prendergast, you know, they can bring someone like Crowley on, like Jack, and then see what he can do and maybe close out the game. And then it paid off for Ireland, obviously, on the weekend. So you're right. Look, I think there's an element of truth to what you're saying. But that's a case of, you know, the bench and its use evolving. And we've got front row seats to seeing how that's happening. And I think maybe Rassi was a catalyst for that. And now we're seeing different strategies unfold. So what you're saying could perfectly be absolutely true. And this is something we're going to have to keep an eye on during the Six Nations, especially when Ireland starts playing the likes of France. We'll see what tactics they employ then.
So, you know, then if you look at the English bench was a bit of a hodgepodge mismatch, not much experience there to come on. You know, it looks like Steve Borthwick's very focused on his starting 15 and sort of the bench for the English side is a bit of an afterthought. And the whole theme of England last year was they were doing exceedingly well for 40 to 60 minutes in the game, then making some silly substitutions and fading off in the last 20 of every game. And we see it here again, England winning the first half 10 points to 5, then losing the second half 22 points to 12, and ultimately, obviously, losing the game. Where does that come from, Ronnie? Why are England doing that?
No, look, I wish I had the answer for that. And Steve Borthwick sure wishes he had the answer for that. Because you're right, he is stuck in his ways. He's trying to find starting 15 rather than perhaps looking at a extended 23 or even maybe 27 players or 30 players. Yeah, look, I think Borthwick's under a lot of pressure, right? So England's been disappointed over the last couple of years, the last two World Cups, going down in two finals or one final and one semi-final. Yeah, look, I think Borthwick's desperate and he's probably made a whole bunch of promises and it hasn't quite panned out the way that he's wanted it to. But maybe it's less so on England and more a case of Ireland and France just becoming so much stronger and so much better that yes, it's overshadowing perhaps some minor improvements that we're seeing on England's side. But you're right, a bit of desperation, I'd imagine, from Borthwick.
Then, you know, last week we spoke about Alex Mitchell, how good it was that he was linking back up with the English side. I don't really know if you can judge the player that much, but I've seen a lot of talk in the English media that he was the weak link at the weekend. He's off the pace, his positional play not being great. I do think someone returning from a long injury layoff like that does deserve a chance to reacquaint themselves with the system.
Yeah, look, it's the first week of the Six Nations too. So, look, the way we see Borthwick, he's probably gonna stick to his guns, and Alex Mitchell will be back in the mix again. You know, he's probably the first choice. I think he is a very good nine, and you're rightly so. So he's been out for a while. It's also just the first week. The whole team's been out. Combinations aren't working as well as they want them to. Jock, just give him a little bit of time, I think. England got a big, big game out of the way now, and they're going to focus on the remaining four teams that they have to play. So Alex Mitchell's really going to, you know, have the opportunity to step up and play as well as a lot of people think he is.
Ronnie, Dan Sheehan, Ireland hooker. Now there's talk of him being the world's best hooker. I'm going to take away the argument about Bongi and Malcolm Marx because people are going to call us biased talking about this. But if we're looking at the best hooker in the Northern Hemisphere, even, I don't think it goes to Sheehan. I think it goes to Malvaka.
Yeah. Look, Dan Sheehan's obviously an incredible player too. I personally would go for Malvaka as well, purely because of what he was able to do against in the World Cup. It wasn't last year, it was 2 years ago, 2023. So, but yeah, Dan Sheehan's still a fantastic player. But there's always, like, everybody's going to claim that they're the player in their team is the world's best, and look, the Irish are a loud bunch, and that's why we like them, and that's also why we don't like them. So they're just like us. So yeah, Dan Sheehan, maybe not the world's best. I would probably also go for Malvaka, but yeah, Dan Sheehan's not a bad hooker to have. I'd be very happy if he was a hooker in my side.
No, for sure. Then just a last passing comment, Ronnie. Ireland and the bloody 50-22. I don't think there's a team that exploits that as well as them across the pitch. It's really frustrating. They're constantly getting those kicks and getting lineouts in the opponent's 22-meter line, forcing your wings to drop back. And then they're unleashing James Lowe, and what he did to Alex Mitchell was horrendous this weekend. Or Mac Hansen on the other side. So, yeah, well done to Ireland on their 50-22 prowess.
No, for sure, right? Especially when you've got someone like a James Lowe with a big left boot, right? So he's perfectly positioned to capitalize or exploit that left boot angle. And he does that very well.
For sure he does. Ronnie, then we've got a lot of Six Nations rugby coming up again this weekend, but there is one URC fixture. The Stormers will be hosting the Bulls. That's at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Bulls are currently in third place. They've played 8 games and are on 30 points. The Stormers in 12th place, having played 9 games and on 21 points. The Bulls do have a game in hand there. What's your prediction for that one?
No, nice north-south derby. Very traditional game. You know, a lot of tension, a lot of passion behind this game. But it has to go to the Bulls, right? Between the two sides, they're in form. Although I suppose a lot of Bulls fans would say they're not in form. But look, they're in third place for a reason. So I'd expect this to go the Bulls' way, even though it's away for a home for them. It'll be tight as a result of that, but I still think the Bulls will pull it off.
Yeah, I think Bulls are going to take this one. Storm has been struggling a little bit.
Sorry, the one thing I will say, though, is a 2 o'clock kickoff sucks, especially on that stadium. That Greenpoint Stadium casts a massive shadow onto the field at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Maybe it's not so intense while you're playing on the field, but for us viewers, it's a pretty hectic shadow that they have at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Then, Ronnie, over to the Six Nations. Italy versus Wales, 4:15 on Saturday afternoon. Tane Plumtree's been called up to replace the injured Wainwright, and they're also hoping for a return for Toby Faletau to this one. What are your predictions for that game?
Look, I suppose traditionally we'd go for Wales, right? Maybe 5 years ago we'd all back Wales to take this one, but I can't see them actually beating Italy. Italy, I thought, played pretty well against Scotland. Yeah, they ran out of steam at the end there, but Wales is in a massive slump, right? So I'd back Italy to win it at home, right? So yeah, I feel sorry for Wales, but I think this is going to go Italy's way. It won't be easy for Italy. It's definitely not going to be easy for Wales, but I think probably 6 to 8 points for Italy.
Yeah, I think Italy to win by 2 points, handing Wales their 14th defeat in a row. Then over to Twickenham, where England will be hosting France. That's a 6:45 p.m. kickoff on Saturday as well. Jamie George has been called back to the England pack for this one. Who's taking it, Ronnie?
No, I went first, so you go first now. Let's see. Who are you going to back?
I think I've been quite vocal in my rating of England.
France
is going to take this by 14 points.
Mm-hmm. That's 14 points is a lot at Twickenham, but I think you're probably right. 2 scores at least. I don't know, maybe not at least, but I'd probably say 8 to 12 points for France. Sorry, England. Shame.
Then over to Murrayfield, and a big one for Scotland as they host Ireland on Sunday. That's 6:45 p.m. kickoff on Sunday night. 10-match losing streak against the Irish that they'll be hoping to break. And I mean, this has to be their best shot at it. 8 wins out of their last 9 games, in form, couple of injuries, but they'll be licking their lips at this chance at Ireland. Ronnie, what are your predictions for this one?
Look, it's probably going to go Ireland's way, but I just have a feeling that if you're going to call an upset, this is the weekend to call it. I think Scotland are going to take it. Scotland by 2 points, maybe 5 points. I'd back Scotland. They had a nice little game against Italy this past weekend. So a bit of momentum going into this fixture. And, you know, they have a lot to play for. Like you said, 10-match losing streak is, you know, on the cards. So, yeah, my heart says Scotland. My head says Ireland, but I'm going to back Scotland.
There we go, Ronnie. I'm backing Scotland for a 1-point win over Ireland, throwing the Six Nations wide open. That would be incredible to see. Then, Ronnie, a bit of surprise in the news this week. Did you see that the Lions have suddenly released Sanele Nahamba to go and play in Japan? I mean, we haven't seen him featuring much this year, but cast your mind back to last year. He was voted URC Player of the Year, not just for South Africa, for the entire tournament.
Yeah, that's a big loss for the Lions. I think Nahamba, You know, Nahaba didn't impress me at the Sharks, and as soon as he went to the Lions, I started to miss him. He's a quality player. I think it's good for him maybe to go over to Japan. You see a lot of players do go over north and they ply their trade for a season or two, and they come back and they've learned a few things, and they are world class again. So look, it's the right time for him to go. He wants to come back then, and he's got a year or two before the next World Cup. So yeah, by all means, go Nahaba. I like it. Good for him.
Talking about the next World Cup, Ronnie, have you seen they've announced the host stadiums and provinces in Australia, and there will be no games in Canberra, the home of the Brumbies, the most successful Australian Super Rugby side.
The capital city of Australia.
No World Cup games going there. That's quite a surprise, eh?
Yeah, Matt Kitter has been quite vocal about it, and I agree. Look, it's very lopsided there. Certain stadiums are getting a lot of games, like Melbourne's got a lot, and Brisbane's got a lot, and Canberra's got absolutely nothing. But look, I you know, when I'm bored, I do watch my fair share of YouTube travel videos and stuff, and from what I can see, there's absolutely nothing going on in Canberra. So, you know, maybe that's the reason.
Ronnie, then Super Rugby is almost upon us. We do have a Super Group pool going for that one. If guys want to join in, you can just search for the Rugby Punted under the pools, and you'll find all of our options there. Guys, in all honesty, it's just another place you can come to beat Ronnie. So why not? Why not share in the joy?
Okay, Mr. 800, 205, or whatever it is.
Thank you, Jacob. So in Super Rugby, the Reds had a game, a warm-up fixture against the Bristol Bears, who are not doing too bad in the Prem. And the Reds gave them a Polokwane Takaka mask with an 82-21 point win there. It's a hell of an outing from the Reds.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised to actually see that. I thought it was a bit of a joke. I thought someone had come up with some meme that I didn't quite understand, but it was an actual game that took place. And it's a massive walloping from the likes of the Reds over Bristol Bears. So, yeah, good on you, Reds. Absolutely. Nice to see.
Yeah, very nice to see. Ronnie, Mapimpi has been handed a 3-match ban for the incident in the Sharks' last outing against Cardiff. The jersey pulling incident and the eye gouge. He'll be missing fixtures against the Bulls and two against the Lions. You know, in mitigation, they said he did apologize and he was actively involved in the disciplinary proceedings. But in aggravation, he has been charged with something like this before, and hence the 3-week ban. Yeah, I didn't even know he'd been cited until the outcome was published today.
Yeah, I don't know if we can really talk about this. I don't know if that's quite technical, why that is really an eye gouge. But yeah, look, I suppose technically fingers in the opposition's face, you know, it happens. And yeah, it's not nice to see, but yeah, good on old Mapimps to apologize and be involved in the disciplinary is what it is. I suppose that they're just following textbook bans and dishing them out accordingly.
Then I see Tony Brown is currently with the Highlanders in a observative capacity, if you can say that. Is that him, you know, back with his old team, just helping out a little bit and, you know, sharing and gaining some knowledge? Or do you think there's some shithousery on there with the All Blacks going over to Eden Park and taking on the Springboks there later this year?
Look, Rusty would have definitely given Tony some homework, right? Let's be honest. Rusty's always got a plan, but I think this is Tony in his personal capacity. He's allowed to go home. He's allowed to take up jobs when he's not actively involved with the Springboks, I suppose. I suppose there's some sort of clause in his contract. But look, let's be honest. The Highlanders would like to know, what are the Springboks up to? You know, we want to learn. Sure, Rassie said to him, don't worry, Tony. Go ahead. Spill our secrets. But you're acting as a double agent, my friend. Let's be honest. It's Rassie.
Yeah, there's at least a 10% chance of shithousery on the cards right now, if not way more.
90%.
Yeah. Ronnie, then we have to take a bit of a disturbing look. And our readers and our listeners, you guys can go and check out our website. Belinda put a nice article up about it today. But the Springbok injury list, you know, this year-long season really is catching up to us. There's a number of top line players that are currently out injured. The only one that's not really dealing with a soft tissue injury is Eubin, who's got concussion. But you're looking at the likes of Stephen Kitsoff out with his neck, Andre Esterhazen out, Dukanyo Ama out, Apelele Fassi out, Ulrich Lohner out, Ron Norkia's out. You know, you're just rattling off Peter Steph de Toy, all these players that are playing so long, and it's all soft tissue injuries. Are we already starting to pay the price for this, Ronnie?
Yeah, oh, look, dude, it's been a 365-day season for a couple of years now, right? So I suppose the guys are getting tired. If you look at Andre Pollard, he just hasn't stopped playing. He just plays all the time. He's playing right through. You know, we were basically dishing out, Santa Claus was dishing out presents, and Andre Pollard was still playing rugby. So, yeah, look, some of these guys, I feel really sorry for them. And if I was a professional rugby player, I'd definitely go and apply my trade in Japan too, where, look, it's probably a little less demanding on your body, but it is a concern. The only positive thing is, right, that we're still some distance out from the World Cup for the next one. So if they're going to get injured, now's a good time to get the injury. Now's a good time to rest a bit. Let's build some depth as well. Give other players opportunities. Cameron Hanekom and the likes. I'm really excited to see what they can do in a Springbok jersey. So yeah, there's no reason to rush these guys back. Even if it is soft tissue damage or injuries, just let the guys relax. Let them rest a bit. Let's play some of our fringe players and, you know, even further. So yeah, now's not the worst time for these guys to be injured. Like I said, we still have some time for them to recover.
No, for sure. For the national cause, it's not the worst time to be injured, but domestically, it's definitely not something we want to see. And actually, in all honesty, you don't want to see injuries at all in the game, some being more avoidable than others. Ronnie, that takes us then to the May Fokchom moment of the week. Now, there was quite a good few tries from this weekend, but for me, this is a favorite. James Lowe breaking the Alex Mitchell tackle out on the wing, giving the ball off to Jamison Gibson-Park. And the All Blacks, Ireland is going in for a lapper try against the English.
Yeah, an All Black try, an All Black try against England. You know, yeah. Look, I thought it was a great try as well. It was very exciting, and I think if you're an Irish fan, there was a moment where you stood up, you paused, and then you jumped out of your socks again in celebration because it was a brilliant try. Breaking the tackle and then offload, and then Jamison Gibson-Park with a step inside and then off for the try. Yeah, fun try. And yeah, apt moment of the week for sure.
Yeah, and you know, Bundy Aki got a try, James Lowe got a try, Gibson-Park got a try, Gibson-Park got man of the match.
Yeah, I was waiting for a Barrett to score a try as well, but yeah, I didn't see that.
That's it for this week on the Rugby Punted. If you've enjoyed the episode, smash that like button, subscribe, and join us again next week for more rugby insights, banter, and the right amount of cheers. Don't forget to join us on Superbrew 2. We'll see who's got the best rugby predictions and who's just winging it.